Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, it is time for that delivery of Owl Post that comes to you every week, and I am excited to be here. I'm just one of the hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the incredibly talented and just effervescent Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
How are you?
I'm a little humid. It's very, very humid here right now, and I'm
Which is strange for you guys.
Yeah, it's very strange. I feel... It's like 30 or 40% humidity and 100 degrees, so I'm like super miserable. It's like the worst of both worlds, and it's really, really miserable. And I really should stop opening our podcast with weather updates, because they're probably super boring to everyone. It's either an update about my kid or the weather. You know, both are super fascinating to everyone, so sorry about that. I'll be more creative next time.
Let me just say, it could be worse. You could be in Dallas, and it could be like 60% humidity and 100 degrees. So,
oh my gosh, or I could be back. My husband works out of a company in North Carolina, and we went back August, not last year, but the year before. And I want to say it was like 100 degrees and like 80% humidity. And I just remember being like, nope, want to go home. nope, put me back on the plane. I want to go. Like, there was no point in owning a hairdryer because your hair was going to just be poofy and wet as soon as you walked out the door. So... What are you gonna do?
Well, you know, maybe we should just find you a magical solution to the hair problem. You know, we just need to find that
spell,
that right charm, you know, for your hair. So,
or maybe I could just go live in a magical world that isn't so humid.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, I mean, you don't really live in a place that's very humid. Anyway. But we're not here to talk about the weather. We do want to remind everybody before we kick off talking about our chapter this week, The Unexpected Task. You can find us all over the place. Look on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, which is the best place to find us on Twitter because it's the only place to find us on Twitter. You know, follow us over there. Use the hashtag Owlpost if you want to talk to Dre and I. We'd love to talk to you over there. Of course, we are on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, which is another great place to converse with us, because every time we post the show, Dre and I love talking to anybody who posts on that show post. So you can always find us there. You can also check out thenerdparty.com. And while you're over there, if you want to send us an email, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Owlpost, and that will come to Dre and I. Now, I forgot, honestly, that this chapter existed in the sense in the way that it does, because it's so different in the movie. But I have to say, the way that this chapter begins, as the holidays are, you know, quickly approaching, all the classes are wrapping up, and I liked this, that Ron and Harry have gotten all their work done in Transfiguration, so it's, you know, they've got everything done, but then they're goofing off in the back of the classroom and playing with like these trick wands that they got from Fred and George having a sword fight. And it's just, it's so funny because it's so kids. And like, there's a, every once in a while where I feel like she just kind of reminds you, yes, they are still 14. So they do lots of dumb things together.
Yeah. I like that. And I like that it's described like how you imagine, like, two boys in high school, like, dueling with, I don't know, whatever they happen to have. Pool sticks, badminton rackets, pencils, like, whatever they're given. Like, I'm just seeing it, and it's just really fun, and it's really funny, because you kind of don't realize at first it's happening, and then she describes why they're being yelled at, and you're just like, oh, it's so, just ridiculous.
Well, and it's, you know... it's funny because it's in McGonagall's classroom and she's kind of nonsense, but I love that she just makes fun of them by, you know, giving them the look, and then there she says, you know, now that Potter and Weasley have been kind enough to act their age.
I know, I love that.
It's like, I love her sarcasm. I also really love the way that she announces, you know, this whole idea that they're going to be having the ball and, you know, the dress robes will be worn. And she, I love how she's like, it's a time to let your hair down.
I love that the whole time Lavender cannot stop laughing.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I just love that she's just giggling like a fiend. And I think we've all been there where something's funny and then you can't stop laughing at it and it gets funnier. And even if it's really not that funny, anything that kind of adds mm-hmm. to it just amplifies. And I like that we get like, it's hilarious to that it just makes the whole situation awkward that in the movie it's sort of presented with such elegance and pride. Mm-hmm. And here McGonagall's like, this is a thing. Let's all get over it. No one's happy about it. Whatever.
Yeah, she doesn't seem super enthused about it, which is funnier here that she's yeah. not really for this because, you know, it's going to lead to misbehavior. And that's what she's really most worried about. She's like, I will be seriously displeased if any Gryffindor student embarrasses the school in front of these other, you know, schools that are here. And since the, you know, the kind of the wizarding community's eye is on this Triwizard tournament. So I well, do
just
really
makes you, I don't know. It just makes you, if you've ever been to public school and ever went to a homecoming or prom or anything like that, you know exactly what she's talking about, and that something is always, someone's always causing problems and there's always something going mm-hmm. on. So I really like how she kind of, I always like when Rowling kind of blends real life with this like magical, she takes something that's very relatable and real and kind of ties it into the non-relatable and the fictional. So I think this is just one more way that she did that.
My favorite thing is when she pulls Harry aside to tell him that he has to find a partner because he's going to be dancing. And I love his response is like, but I don't dance. She's like, oh, yes, you will. He's like, I'm not dancing. And she's like, it is tradition. You are a Hogwarts champion. And you will represent this school with honor. And like, I just, you can hear the whole thing. Like, she is laying down the law like a stern aunt. And it's just so funny.
Yeah. She's just like, I don't care. I don't care. You're doing this. It's decided. No more discussion. And I like how at the end she says, in a tone that makes you think this was final. You know, the last thing she yes. says has a tone that this is the final word. And you're like, we all know what that is. We all know what that tone is. We can all see, you know, Maggie Smith as McGonagall having that tone. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. Every once in a while, she just, you know, she doesn't need to continue on. You just know that that's that.
She's pretty much like, who's got two thumbs and doesn't give a crap? You know, this witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think that's really funny. And so we've got this whole thing where the school is now in like frenzied mode because all of these people who don't normally stay for Christmas holidays because the ball is on Christmas Day are going to be staying at Hogwarts fourth and year and above. And so it's very different. And I love how Harry's like, I just want to get the nerve up to ask Cho, but she's older than I am. She's really pretty. She's a great Quidditch player and she's really popular. And it's just, that's what's going through his mind. And I just think it's exactly what teenage boys, the internal monologue that we have when we like a girl, we're like, but she's too pretty and she's too popular. And it's just very funny. I just think it's cute.
I like how it was pretty true to the movie in this case, but I do like how they're so upset that they can't get these girls apart, that all of a sudden mm-hmm. there's so many more girls at Hogwarts than they had seen, and all of a sudden none of them ever are alone. And
yes.
I just think it's so funny, that awareness, and all of a sudden you're very astutely aware of the fact that like this mm-hmm. is sort of what kicks off dating for them. Like all of a sudden
yeah.
dating is a thing, and this is
yep.
what they're doing, you know, like you kind of hear about it before them, but this is sort of the first time it's really dawned on them, at least in the book.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that I find most fascinating about this is that, you know, you get the feeling like they haven't thought too much about girls up to this point. You know, Harry's started to kind of have this crush on Cho, And, you know, Ron's made some comments here and there that you get the feeling like they're starting to recognize that girls exist, right? You know, that, but there hasn't been this, you know, they haven't tried to date anybody or anything like that. And so, yeah, this really is thrusting them into that. And maybe even before these two are ready. And
right.
And I also love Ron. He's like, man, dude, you're going to be fine. You know, you're a champion. You beat a Hungarian horntail. People are going to be queuing up to be on a date with you, which then that actually happens when all of these girls start asking Harry out. And he, the first one, he's so shocked by the thing, it happening. He's just like, no. And before he even realizes he said no, he said no.
I do like, though, that as we go through this process of all these girls asking him out, it's really Hermione's words that are ringing in his ear, right? That they only like Crumb because he's famous. And he kind of keeps playing that over in his head, you know? They only, he's sort of like internalizing it. They only like me because I'm famous, you know? And that I think that that's a very unique perspective to have on things. You know, he's doing the opposite of what maybe Ron would do. Ron would maybe be like, I'm famous. Ha ha. I can have whatever I want. And Harry's like, I only have what I want because I'm famous, not because I earned it. So I find that just so interesting. And I love where we find ourselves like at the end of the chapter with, you know, Harry finally gets the courage to ask Cho to go to the ball. And I like how in the book it's, will you go to the ball with me? Because it's all one word.
Yes.
Will you go to the ball with me? And she's like, what? And you can just imagine him like blurting this out randomly and like mumbling, can't understand what he's saying. And it's like, what? And I love that, you know, he asks and she's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, someone's already asked me. And then he sort of also goes, well, who? Like, he's just at this point, it's just his gut reaction, you know, and she tells him it's Cedric. And you can just kind of hear him get crushed. You can just kind of hear the little like heart go like a can that you've crushed. And it's just,
well, in the internal monologue there too, of he'd kind of come around on Cedric. Cedric was a nice guy, and until at this moment when he realized he's awful, and that there had just been this switch in him that, you know, realizing that he wasn't going to get the girl that he wanted to go with because of this other boy led to him not liking this other kid, you know. And it's very, very true to life, and I think that's very funny, especially at that age where, you know, it's like a competition. You know, because
and it feels like the end of the world. It feels like he has to, you know, he is super into Cho and there'll never be anybody else. And this is it. And his one chance and his one shot. Now it's gone. You know, it's just like he kind of feels like that's everything. So
it was really interesting to see that life has kind of changed a little bit for Harry. Because after winning, you know, and tying for first place in the tournament, people are treating him better. And he also has the thought that it's a possibility that Cedric also told the, you know, Hufflepuffs to back off of Harry because he had helped Cedric. And so it was interesting to hear the idea that Harry's thinking he hasn't earned things. When you think about it, like everything that, I mean, apart from being famous for the Voldemort thing, you know, the other things that he has done, he has earned, you know, like, and so, but I think, yeah, there is this thought process to him, like, and I it goes back to something I said last week. It's like, it's not a humility. I just think that Harry doesn't necessarily understand how to differentiate yet, you know, like, the difference between being a jerk because of what you've done and being able to, you know, have the correct amount of pride for what it is you have accomplished. You know, he doesn't know that yet. And I find that really interesting.
Well, and I feel a little bit like he may have done well at something, but the opportunities that are given to him are always come to him in less than favorable situations, right? He may have beat this dragon, but he only had the opportunity to beat the dragon because he got entered into the cup. You know, he has defeated Voldemort in the first one only because he broke the rules and went into the East Wing corridor or whatever. You know, like, he's only sort of afforded opportunities to accomplish these great things because of, you know, fairly questionable methods, I guess. And sometimes they're not his fault and sometimes they are, and some, you know, just general curiosity or whatever. But you know, it's just, it's one of those things where I feel like he doesn't give himself credit because he doesn't want anyone to look too hard. He doesn't want anyone to kind of dig or think too much about it. He kind of just wants it to go away, you know? So a little bit, I think he, you know, he's proud of himself for beating the dragon, but there's probably also a part of him that's like, well, anyone really could have beat a dragon. Like, you know, I got lucky versus talented. So got a little imposter syndrome going on there.
Yeah, the other thing that, you know, I thought was kind of interesting is we get them in Care of Magical Creatures as that class is, you know, looking to wrap up. And they ask, you know, because the last time Rita Skeeter came around and Harry's wondering, like, what was it that she wanted to know, you know? And Hagrid tells, you know, Harry, she didn't really want to know anything about me. She just wanted to know about you. And I love how we get to the fact that she was just basically looking for dirt on Harry. And all that, of course, Hagrid's going to tell him is, yeah, he's a great kid. I love that guy. Like, and that she kind of went off kind of upset because she doesn't have another story now that Harry's not a delinquent.
When I like how they're like, well, if she'd asked Snape, she could have gone.
Yes, yes. That was the best. Because then they start mimicking Snape about what he would say. Mm-hmm. Oh, that boy's been crossing rules ever since he got here.
It was something like Snape would rather, he'd rather do something, or he'd rather do this than adopt Harry or something like that.
Yes. There was something that I also enjoyed, and it's one of those places where she dropped something in to help remind you that, you know, Harry has not spent his life in this wizarding world, and there's still so much that he doesn't know, and how the hype around the ball is just getting bigger and bigger, and how the rumors about it are just getting crazier and crazier about how, you know, Dumbledore bought 800 barrels of mulled mead, you know, for Madame Rose Murda, and how the weird sisters are coming, and how Harry's like, I don't even
people
know what
excited.
That means. Maybe there's some sort of, yeah, so maybe I should be, I don't know. And I think that it's something where she does such a good job of inserting these little moments that remind you how much of this world is still kind of foreign to Harry. And it's a lot of fun when she does that, I think. And you get this idea that they have the wizarding wireless network. So they do have, you know, wizarding radio.
That they have, but a wizarding tax system. No, I'm just kidding. So, sorry. Call back.
Yeah. Well, we're a wizarding TV type thing, you know, apparently they don't have that. So yeah, it was just one of those little moments that I thought was nice. And then I there's another little moment that was really fun too, that kind of remind you that yes, this tournament is still going on, which Hermione is like, Harry, have you forgot about the fact that you have an egg you haven't figured out? And she's like, and he's like, oh, Hermione, I've got ages. And she's like, well, do you want to be the only one who hasn't figured it out? And I just like how him and Ron play it off like, it's fine. We got plenty of time. Don't worry about it.
Oh, my God. I know. It made me, being the Hermione in this case, it made me so anxious. Like, God, get on it.
Well, and I can get kind of where the boys are coming from the sense that, you know, they do. He's got a couple of months, you know, even after the holidays. But I also get where Hermione's going at, which is, yeah, you don't want to look like an idiot when you, you know, think of this, you know. So I just,
well, for me, I was Hermione's point was like, yeah, you've got a couple more months, but you don't know what you're going to find out, and so it could take you a couple months once you find out how it works. Yes. You know, there's a reason they gave you that much time. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, you've got a couple of months, but you don't want to figure out the first step at the last second and be like, crap, I wish I had six more weeks. But,
well, and it does go to show, and what I like about it is she does such a good job of kind of showing why all three of them work so well together. And Hermione is the person who helps remind them that there are very important things that are going on. And so, yeah, I love that. And I really appreciate that. Rowling does such a good job of showing you why each one of these characters is important. And so the other interesting thing, too, is we've had this weird thing going on with Fred and George this whole book, really. Ever since they've been back to school, they've been doing secret things.
Little weird conversations on the side.
And they ask Ron if they can borrow his owl. And, you know, Ron's like, well, no, because he's not there. And then they won't tell him what they need. And so I just think that there's this little moment. She just keeps kind of building this thread to see what they're up to. But apparently they're going to have to, you know, use another owl. And at the same moment is this other great moment where they're like, have you asked any girls out yet? And no. And this is where we get, you know, Fred just asking out Angelina, which is so funny. You know, just yelling over across the room, hey, Angelina, you want to go with me?
I know.
Okay.
And I like that it mirrors the movie pretty well. Like, he doesn't throw something at her in the book, but, you know, the same idea implies he just sort of shouts and gets it over with. And he's like, see, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's just a different approach. Just shows the difference that, you know, like, two years. I think the Weasley twins are 2 years older than Ron. That, like, 2 years really makes, right? They could give a hoot. Ha ha ha. They could give a hoot about what, you know, the girls think. They're like, yeah, whatever. We got our secret side conversations.
And what's also really funny is then we have this very, very boy conversation of Ron talking about how he doesn't want to, you know, take a troll to and then Hermione's like, well, you could, you know, Eloise Bigden. And she's like, but her acne's a lot better, and she's really nice. And Ron's like, but her nose is off center. And he's just being a total turd, and I love it.
He is.
Like, it's because one of the things that I think is very smart in here is that, like, she doesn't downplay that these kids are kids that can be jerks.
Right.
I think that's important.
Right. She makes, this is kind of, we talked a little bit about this at the beginning of our whole project here, about how Ron sort of represents, you know, he always kind of represents the ignorant perspective to things, right? He's very versed in the wizarding world, but because of that, he carries over a lot of their biases and their ignorances. And I think this is just a good, again, true to that character, and that he's very ignorant about, you know, women and perspectives. And, you know, he's approaching this from a very superficial kind of way, and, you know, and Hermione is very quick to point that out, and it's just one of those things where, like, you know, I think it's true. I think that little kids and who grow into teenagers, who grow into adults, aren't always aware that what they say is hurtful or not accurate or something to that effect. So him kind of being almost misogynistic in this case is very fitting for the stage his character's in. And he gets to learn how to not be that way. You know, and he gets to learn what happens when he sort of shout asks out Fleur Delacour.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's something that is important because it makes these students be somebody who has to learn, you know, like Ron and Harry, there's stuff for them to learn here, which is good. And you want your characters to be in that position. And, you know, I think too, male or female, we, especially in the world that we grow up in, you know, we're told that we should want the hottest, right? Because that's where everything tells us, you know? And so we have to learn that it's more about other people and the whole of the person than just what they look like. And so
that there's more to a person's value than their appearance.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the thing that is really nice. And that's something that I think each of them kind of learn throughout the series, just FYI. So, yeah. I love that they make this partnership, that they're going to ask girls by the end of the day, the next day, and they both come back totally flummoxed because they both totally failed. You know, you said, as you mentioned, and we talked about earlier, Harry had rasped out Cho, and she said no because she was already going with somebody else. And Ron, yeah, he had just, you know, spewed out. This question to Floor, and she didn't even answer him. I love that Harry makes him feel better being like, she's part Vila, and so she was talking to Diggory. She was probably putting the moves on him, and that's probably why, you know, you as you walked by, you couldn't help it. It's not really your fault. And I thought that was really funny, but
so kind.
It's probably true, though, too.
It is probably true.
Yeah.
But it's so nice that Harry, instead of being like, oh, Ron, was like trying to make him feel better, you know? I also like that she has that callback, right? Because I guess he never would have told Ron yet. You know, he figured that out when they were fighting. So it also is kind of his segue into sharing his news, right? That he kind of flummoxed or flopped with Cho. And it's because she's going with Cedric, you know, and it's kind of his little segue, you know, like, oh, well, you know, she's wasting her time because he's already going with Cho, you know,
mm-hmm.
like it's kind of his way of sharing that without having to come out and be right. like, well, I also failed.
Well, and what makes that so funny is and interesting is that Ginny is the one who has been sitting there with Ron, kind of like trying to comfort him. And the moment that he mentions that he asked Cho, she stopped smiling. This is not funny, apparently. Then
she's instantly kind of upset about what's happening.
Does not like that. And then, of course, this whole thing happens with like them talking about Hermione and, you know, her turning down Neville. And so Ron's like, well, Hermione's a girl. You could go. And she's like, no, I'm already going with somebody else. And he's like, no, you're not. And it pretty much plays out like the movie.
I do like, though, that he's like, what does he say? I just realized you're a girl. And she's like, it took you 3 years to realize I'm a girl. And now you want me to go to the ball with you? No. And he's like, okay, fine. I've known you're a girl for 3 years. Now will you go to the ball with me? And she's like, no. Like, that's not the point.
Well, and yeah, that's the thing that I think is so interesting. And part of that is, you know, there is that thing when you grow up with somebody, and this is so true, where you just don't see them in the same light, you know, necessarily. Like, you might not, if you spend all of your time with somebody like Ron, Harry, and Hermione do, it can be harder because you're already close friends to maybe see them as, you know, the opposite sex in that way, because there's never been that before. And, you know, so for Ron to have not really paid attention to that, I love the how she writes it. Like, it just makes so much sense. And it's really funny and it's really cute that Ron then... What he says is pretty offensive to Hermione, you know.
Well, I mean, it's pretty offensive in general.
I mean, the fact that he's never paid attention to her enough to kind of like put two and two together that she's a girl like that. And then the way he treats her and the way he treats his sister is not great. So neither of them have great track records here. Luckily, Parvati walks in. Harry marches across the room, asks her if she will go with him. Luckily, she says yes. He's like, do you know anybody that can go with Ron? She's like, well, I can ask my sister, Padma, who's a Ravenclaw.
No, she asks, she's there with Lavender, and he kind of goes, well, Lavender can go with Ron. And then, well, I'm already going with Seamus. So it's kind of like, and then he's like, do you have anybody? Is there anybody you can come up with? And that's, you know, when she brings up her sister who's in Ravenclaw, she'll ask.
And he's like, oh, whew, thank God. I find it kind of hilarious This whole chapter, one of the things I think that it does so well is that Rowling does a great job of writing these students at this age and just how awkward it is when you start to have these things like dates, you know, and trying to figure things out and how, you know, it's just not easy. And so I think she does a very good job of writing this, and just she does a great job of making it funny. You know, it is.
Yeah, and I don't want to be 15 again.
No.
It makes me not want to be 15 again.
No, so nobody.
To all you listeners that are 15, it does get better.
Yeah.
It gets better.
It does. And so she does a very good job of that, and I really appreciate the way she writes it. And again, I also appreciate that she writes the chapter, and she doesn't negate the fact that you have Ron and her Harry, and more so in this case Ron, who's oblivious to how to treat women. You know, that's not something that he's learned yet, and it's something that he will learn, you know. So that's part of growing up. That's part of this process, and I think that's really, I really enjoy that she lets them go through this. So I think it's a nice thing, because it's going to be an important lesson for both of them in the coming years. So I think that's great. But that's the end of the chapter, and we'll have to wait to see what happens next week as we come back and we have the Yule Ball. Finally, all of this plays out and we can just get to the Yule Ball. But before we do that,
we can find out who Hermione is. Yes. Going with, she is going with someone, and Ginny won't share, because it's not her news to share, which is very mature of Ginny.
Yep. And I also love that Ginny is going to the ball too, we find out, because she's going with Neville. So yeah, I love that.
I love it.
Yeah, it's so cool that Neville had the courage to ask somebody. So very good. Good on you, Neville.
Two somebodies.
Yeah, yeah. Because he asked Hermione first, so which is awesome. Which apparently he recognized that she's a girl. So
yeah, he's got good taste. Neville's got good taste in the ladies.
Well, and it makes sense, too, because when you think about it, one of the few girls to treat him well and treat him like a human being is Hermione.
And the other one is Ginny.
Yeah, so I really like that. But before we get there, before we can see what happens with all those things, we've got nothing left. So the chapter is over, and if anybody wants to catch up with the Adrea and talk to you more about Harry Potter or anything else, where can they find you online?
Sure. If you want to join me in wishing Matthew a belated happy birthday, because the date of this recording is his birthday. Wah, so if you want to join me in wishing him a belated happy birthday, you can find me on Twitter at PCFchick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
Well, thank you. I try not to bring that up, but
I know, that's why I did it for you.
Appreciate that. But you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. You can also find me over on Instagram under the same name. I'm also doing another podcast over here on this network that you can find, and that's called Aggressive Negotiations. I do with John Mills, and that is all about Star Wars every week, and it's a lot of fun. I hope you'll check that out. You could find me also over on the Trek FM network doing a couple of shows. One of the shows that I do there is called The Orb with Chris Jones, and that's where we talk all about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then the next show that I do over there is called The 602 Club, and that is our general geek show, as we talk all about the fandoms that we love. We don't just, you know, talk about one. We try and get in as many as possible. It really is a great time, so I hope you will check that out. And then, last but not least, I do a show with my good friend Courtney, and that is called Cinema Stories, as we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. But we want to thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.